Welcome to Good Business Pays TV, where we interview people who are not only paying fast and paying their suppliers fast, but also business organizations that represent business and the world of business people. And today we are joined by Alex Till and Carol Daniels, both of whom represent the National Enterprise Network. And if I've got my titles right, Carol is Operations Director and Alex is the Chair. They will tell me if I'm wrong. But first of all, I think it's probably worth us finding out a little bit about what the National Enterprise Network is. Carol, do you want to start us off?
Yes, certainly. Thank you, Terry. So National Enterprise Network, we were formed in 1992, and we act as the voice of enterprise support organisations. We are a not-for-profit organisation. We're independent, and we offer an impartial service. So in effect, we are a membership organisation. We represent our members to government and to public and private sector. We promote the work of our members, and we also connect our members to other organisations, not only within the membership, outside of the membership. Alex, did you want to speak more about the representational work?
Yeah, sure, Carol. I was just going to pick up as well that our members work directly with those small and micro businesses across the whole of the country. So we cover from Leeds, Newcastle, Manchester, right down to Plymouth, Devon and Cornwall for all of those small businesses who are the everyday mainstay of the UK economy. What else do we do, Carol? We support those organisations that support them. So we've got lots of materials for advisors, and we've got the ability to share our knowledge around the rest of the other programs and support that are available. And not only that, we take their views. So the client's views are fed through to our membership, and we then represent it at government level, whether that be with Department of Trade and Industry, whether it be with the Department of Business Innovation and Skills, or even the Department for Work and Pensions as well. So we offer quite a significant amount of support for the member organisations and also their clients, which they work with on a daily basis.
And is that large organisations, medium and small, or do you specialise in particular size of organisation?
So where we're at, Terry, at the moment, we're micro businesses and sole traders. So primarily it's with those under 10 employees. A number of our members who have worked for many years, as Carol says, some nearly coming up to 40 years now, have grown incrementally with other organisations. So they do come back and have a pick and mix of services, depending upon what the flavour is that they need at the time they need them. Some will be looking at having ambitions to employ, so we can help them around employment and those opportunities there. Others may be looking at grant funding or cash flow, and then seeing how that model works for their business as they grow, or let's be honest, as they recede in terms of some areas. They may be looking at selling, they may be looking at passing it on to family members, but we're able to offer the advice for our members, the support that they need at a time that they need it more than anything else.
That sounds like very practical support that you're offering then to small businesses and micro businesses.
100%, Terry. We call it the organic side of things. So we work very, very closely. And often we say that people just need someone to have that conversation with, to give them validity about what they are doing and how they are progressing with their business. There's a lot of information out there on the internet. And sometimes people go, we're so much info. How do we actually constrain that to what we need at the time we need it in? And we support our members in terms of being able to enable them to give that advice to the businesses within their locality areas.
And how would you describe the difference between yourselves as a membership network and other similar, you know, so there are quite a lot that look similar or sound similar. But if I'm a small business person or a micro business or a sole trader even, and I'm thinking about joining a network, you know, what are the sort of top three things that make you all stand out?
I think the difference is, Terry, where you have organizations such as the Chamber of Commerce, the Federation of Small Business, and organizations that you have to pay an annual membership to, our clients can go to our members and have delivery and services free at point of contact. Yes, the representative organisations are members of the National Enterprise Network, but their clients do not have to pay for that service. So there's no membership below the level of the organisation that represents their clients. So it's quite different in that respect. We do work very, very closely with the Chambers of Commerce, the Federation of Small Business, IPSI, and all of those organisations. But where we're at is, this is about a service that is offered fully funded, I'll say, not free, because free sometimes has slightly different connotations to it, fully funded at point of delivery. So we will offer one-to-one business advice and support through our member network. And our members are the ones which pay the membership on an annual basis, not their clients.
And is there a physical get together as well? Is it a physical network, or is it more of a sort of a virtual service?
Oh my goodness, Carol, I think we have a bit of everything, but I'll let you answer this one.
Yeah, we are. So one of the flagship events that we run is our annual conference. And last year we had it in November, and it was the first time we'd managed to get together face to face post-COVID, really. And it was an absolute tremendous event. It's a great networking opportunity, and that's what our members really love, that they can come and meet in a central location, have, you know, a real good program of events, really, but have that opportunity where like-minded organizations, because all our members are passionate about the work that they do in supporting you know, micro business, small business, but to have them all in that one location, you know, they see that as a real benefit to the organization, you know, to the membership, really.
I think the great piece as well about the national conference is that it brings together a whole range of different organisations, those at government level, those who are changing policy, those who are actually representing small businesses, and then actually the small businesses themselves. So they can actually have an input and a direct level of opportunity to have that communication with people who understand and need to understand what is required by small and micro businesses at the current moment in time. So that's excellent. Carol, also, we do the virtual networks. So we bring together business leaders. So people like Liz Barkley from the Small Business Commissioner, she will come on stream with us. Kevin Hollenrake we've had as well. And we open that up to our membership and also their clients. So should they want to have a voice with government directly and air some of their annoyances, I'll say, Terry, I'll pick that word that seems nice and casual at the moment, they then have the opportunity to do so. This is not about us just sitting there saying, we're lobbying government. This is about a dialogue. This is about a conversation. And this is about making people understand how we can offer them the benefits of their everyday life within a small and micro business.
So I think we've been working together between Good Business Pays and the National Enterprise Network probably for 18 months now. But how does the sort of payments agenda, whether it be late or slow payments, how does it affect your members? How does this agenda item play into what the dialogue is with your members?
There's stony silence there. Do you want me to go with that one? It's really interesting, Terry. Obviously, coming out of the back end of the pandemic, and a lot of businesses finding different ways in which they can deliver their services or their products, we found that cash flow and financing and staffing have been quite fundamental to what we're doing. We've seen a lot of changes in terms of C-bills, bounce back loans, and people looking at using finance to their advantage. And now as we come out at the back end of that, they're looking at how they're planning, they're looking at their cash flow, but they're also looking at when they're going to be paid. So they've got more knowledge and more time around the benefits that being paid on time for them is fundamental. So that's where we've been engaging with it. We're giving out information, Good Business Pays, right across our network. So our members are seeing the information that we're gathering, the discussions that Carol's having with Liz, the Small Business Commissioner, and then looking at where there are issues around people being paid late, or if people are being paid slowly. That's fundamentally important to us, because actually that can be the lifeline to some businesses and whether or not they continue to succeed or whether or not they have to pay for additional resource, whether that be finance, to enable them through those, as I call it, the shark's teeth of when they're waiting for money. So it has a fundamental impact for us, Terry. And we have to be very, very clear that where people get paid has a direct impact on not only them as an organization, but also the families and the suppliers that they're trying to work with as well. And as a small and micro business, finance is fundamental. It really, really is fundamental. When you say cash flow is king, it really is. It really is.
Yes, Carol, I think we last worked together on a grand scale, as it were, when we launched the Weight Off campaign.
You remember, that's right, yeah.
That was really talking about the stresses and the strains caused by late or slow payment to micro businesses and sole traders and what have you. Do you think there's a difference between late and slow as it affects your members and business leaders? But I know Alex talked about late and slow, and we talk about both of those things at Good Business Pays. Which is the one that's more important or should be treated differently?
I was trying to think, Alex, because we had this discussion earlier, didn't we, about late and slow payments.
I think it's interesting, Carol, because different people have different levels of acceptability. And let's be honest, it's not acceptable. If you deliver a service or you deliver a product, you expect to be paid for what you have done. We had a discussion recently whereby a large organization said, can you believe it? Our sandwich lady wasn't able to bring the sandwiches in because she's on holiday. So I had to nip out and buy some sandwiches from Tesco's. I don't know if I can plug large organizations, Terry, apologies. So I said, that's really interesting. So when did you pay for your sandwiches? And she went, what, at Tesco's? I had to get some petty cash and I had to go and pay for them there and then. And we don't really use cash at the moment. So I was like, that's really interesting. So you paid for them there and then with a large organization. Well, yes, we had to. Okay, so your sandwich lady who delivers this as a small business, when do you pay her? Well, I don't know. Oh, okay. So do you pay her in 30 days? Do you pay her in 60 days? Do you pay her immediately? When do you pay her? Oh, well, it goes through finance. And I think that's the point, Terry. You know, interestingly, you see that a small business who is delivering those sandwiches into an organization will have to wait for their payment. However, it's acceptable for that organization, the large one, to go and buy them directly from Tesco's and pay another larger supplier immediately. And this is sometimes where we have to see the difference in it. So slow payment causes cash flow issues. Late payment causes massive concerns for some businesses because they are reliant on the money coming forward so they can pay staff wages, so they can pay their rent, so they can actually make sure that they can live as individuals and not have to skip a month where they don't take their wages. And I think that's the difference, is about knowing when it's going to happen. So slow payments do happen, and sometimes the communication around that can be very honest and very understanding and very... not very good, but very able to be dealt with because the business knows in advance. When it's late and you're expecting it and there is no face of an organization to go to and they just say, oh yeah, it's held up in finance, that then starts to cause a problem and worry and anxieties and all the other mental health related issues which happen when you feel that you are stopping your payments to others because you haven't been paid and you become that bit in the middle which just has to take the pressure from both angles, not only being chased, but also having to chase for your finances as well. That's becoming the difficulty with small business. And then you've still got to deliver what you need to do it with your product or with your service. So yes, slow, late, it all has an impact.
It does. So what would you say? Would you say that a 90-day payment contract is okay if you're always paid on time?
I would say that if you've made the agreement for a 90-day payment term, which I'm not saying is a good term, Terry, if you are paid on time and you know that within that 90-day period, exactly on that date, your money will drop into your bank and you know that it's there, you can then make provision for that. I'm not saying it's good, but you can make provision because you actually know when it is going to arrive. And that is important for any business, to make sure that you can understand what finances are coming forward and how you can then make sure that you can pay others as a result of your finance. That's good cash flow. It's looking at it. But then if you want to look at creditor and debtor terms, then that's something else which you need to address.
You know, when we did some work with Liz on a workshop around late payments, we were asked for some examples. So, you know, you just mentioned, Terry, about the 90 days. You know, one of the examples that came from one of our members was one of the businesses that they support, that they knew they were expecting that payment within 90 days. And I think it was on day 85, the company raised issues with the invoices. The invoice which then delayed the payment even more. You know, whereas if the organisation that had received the invoice had looked at it straight away, they could have raised those issues so that they could have still been paid on 90 days. But it was as though the bigger organisation was trying to delay that payment even more, and the knock-on effect on that was, you know, huge to that smaller organisation. And you know, I think it's the sometimes the micro businesses, they perhaps bury their head in the sand. They're nervous about challenging, because obviously they've won this contract, they don't want to rock the boat, but actually the impact of them not getting paid on time or when they're expecting it is huge. So you know, I think it's, you know, we need to look at ways that we can arrange that you know, raise that awareness, really, that they need to be challenging. But it is a difficult one, because again, they're scared of that knock-on effect, really.
So on that point then, some practical advice from working with all the businesses that you work with, on the question of how do you avoid getting into the trap or the problem of being caught by slow or late payment in the first place. Any advice for small business owners, micro business owners, to avoid it before it happens?
The first one for me, Terry, is set your terms at the start. Okay, so you understand what needs to be managed and what you are prepared to accept as you move forward with a new contract. That for me is really, really important. If you set those terms, you know that you can deal with that yourself. If you suddenly go in and say, oh yeah, they've said that they'll pay us in 120 days, that's fantastic. Well, maybe it's fantastic for them, but not for you. So make sure that you understand your terms as a small business and when you would like to be paid and when you expect to be paid, and have that early stage discussion. That for me is really important. Carol, do you want to come forward with some others?
Yeah, I was just going to say perhaps them having the right knowledge of the impact of, okay, if they know they're going to get paid in 60 or 90 days, but they've still got to pay their own suppliers in a shorter term than that, how are they going to actually manage that cash flow? How are they still going to be able to pay their staff wages, that kind of thing? Having more awareness around that, you know, what do they say? Knowledge is best, really, isn't it? Having that better understanding.
I was going to say, Terry, what I'd also do is have some financial planning, so that when you sit down at the start of each month, you can understand what your outgoings are going to be and what your incomes are going to be as well. That for me is really, really important. Whether a small business, large business, whether personal finance, understand where that sits within what you're doing on that monthly basis. If you then need to address any issues, you've got the ability to have the fact and the knowledge there with what you're doing. That for me is really, really important. Then if you think that there's going to be some areas where there may be some delays, you can then start to either have the conversation with the payment organization, or you can start looking at how you can manage your cash flow in a much more knowledgeable fashion. And if I'm honest, a lot of small businesses live off their bank balance. So they'll look at the bank and they'll say, oh, there's money in the bank, but they won't necessarily look at what's going out of the bank. So one minute it could be quite high, the next day it could be quite low. And it is, once again, these little shark's teeth which can catch you out. So if you've got your financial planning in place and you've actually done a very rudimentary cash flow for the month, then you can start to understand where you are as an organization. And then that gives you good information for expansion as well, should you need it, or taking staff on, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, and I suspect there's something around how you communicate your terms to your potential big client, i.e. not just being unhelpful and saying, well, these are our terms, this is what I want, yeah, but explaining why that's important.
Yeah. It's having a dialogue. Yeah, very much so. Yeah.
Having a dialogue. Because, the big company, if it wants to buy from a smaller one, doesn't want them to go out of business.
Yeah.
And so the large company understanding why you're asking for that,
yeah,
I think it's probably quite important, isn't it?
And I think it's really interesting as well, Terry. And if we look at the scale of things, we spoke with one large organisation who had delayed on a payment for a small organisation. And they went, oh, yeah, we've been paying money consistently. We don't see that there's an issue. What they didn't realise was the scale of what needed to be passed on to that small business. So the small business only needed, I think it was about £5,500, which is what they were owed. The large business was doing hundreds of thousand pounds in terms of invoicing to a large organisation. And in their mind, oh, it's only 5,500. It was a small amount. It didn't have that resonance with them around how it was going to impact so much on that small business. So there's a re-education for both parties, I think, sometimes, Terry.
Have you ever seen any examples of, I think we call it the ripple effect, which is Good Business Pays talks to a lot of very large organizations, and they will talk about the fact that they have good payment terms for very small businesses, but they have longer payment terms for other big suppliers. And one of the things that I try to explain to them is that if you wait to pay that other big supplier, you're now into a sort of chain that goes back from the restaurant to the, I don't know, the company that makes the potato fries, then it goes back to the potato wholesaler, then back to the farm. That at some point, when that cash gets held up from big company to big company, it is going to have an effect on the small or micro business down the line. Have you seen any of that at all?
I have a really interesting example about that, Terry. There's an organization which basically produces quails, and then they will feed them, and then they will go off to some of the large restaurants in the whole range of different cities, et cetera, et cetera. Now, at one point, they were slowly not getting paid by a number of restaurants because people weren't eating there, et cetera, et cetera. But the fact was that the quails themselves had to be slaughtered at a certain period of time. And as they were waiting and people not buying, the quails were getting bigger. So all of a sudden you're saying the impact of someone not getting paid led on to the restaurants not being able to buy what they were requiring, which meant that the farmer who had the quails was sitting there with these quails getting bigger and suddenly past their prime. So the really interesting thing was, and we had a discussion around it, was what happens to the quails, because we can't just keep storing them and feeding them because it becomes a bigger cost to us, and then we've got to work out how we pay for those feeds. And it went into, this is probably a crazy one, it went into pet foods. So to make sure that they'd still got their cash flow, they were looking at other ways in which these birds could be slaughtered, they'd then go into the pet foods, and then they could maintain their cash flow. So the ripple effect is there, but the small business was mindful that they needed to monitor what was happening, both in terms of their product and in terms of who was going to be buying it and at what point. So that ripple effect is live, literally, as we see it. And can I touch on it, Terry? It often happens within local authorities. They take large contracts. Those large contracts, maybe through building organizations, will then look at how they use local suppliers to work on those large contracts. But the payment terms then become longer and longer and longer, but it still has an impact on those small businesses who are within that supply chain. So that for me is very, very often the case, where we get calls saying, we're waiting on a contract, it's a local authority one, we know we've got the money coming in, but we're just being delayed. And that's something which we're aware of. And we can see it in all sorts of areas, whether that be in care industries, whether it's in the building industry, a whole range of different things. But yeah, we just have to be mindful of that ripple effect, because it is live and no one really sees it. They think that it's happening and they're doing things in a good way, but often it does have that ripple effect across a whole range of different supply chains.
Yeah, because local authorities have quite good and fast payment, but if it's only to the tier one supplier, everything else below that is invisible, even though they might be using local people to do the heavy lifting.
Literally. Yeah, 100%. That's not me having a go at local authorities or anything else. It's just the nature of things which we see coming forward. And sometimes where you do have small specialist firms, if like asbestos removal and things like that, that is important for them to make sure that their cash flow works significantly with what they're trying to achieve. And they're all doing very, very good work. That's not a criticism about work at local authority level or small business level. It all works. But yes, that fundamental ripple does have an impact. It really does.
So if a small business, a micro business is actually now having problems with slow and late payment, they're in trouble, what advice might you have for them? What should they do?
So firstly, don't stick your head in the sand. If it feels a problem, it probably is a problem. What we'd be saying to all of our members is that they need to make people aware that we can have open, honest, non-biased dialogue. If you've got a cash flow issue, if you've got a late payment issue, if you've got a delayed payment issue, then raise it. You can't sit there in silence and worry, because by the time you have suddenly realized you need to, you could be in a liquidation or a bankruptcy situation. For us, it's about that dialogue. It really, really is important. If we need to look at the levels of funds that are required, then there are opportunities which can be managed through those. But also, if there is a big ongoing consistent issue which we see around the finance aspect of it. Then we've also got the Small Business Commissioner who we can draw into this as well and start to raise those awareness of the role and the importance of it and the significance to all of those small and micro businesses across the UK PLC. So don't sit and suffer in silence, Terry, is what I'm saying. Yes. There are people there who can support it because we've lived and breathed it. We understand that. We've run businesses. We understand the dynamics. And that for us is important. This is not about theory. This is about making sure that businesses survive and maintain their position within the UK economy.
Did you have anything to add to that, Carol? I couldn't see whether you...
No, only as I can only just reiterate what Alex has said is about having that open and honest dialogue, you know, raising, you know, the awareness of the effect of those late or slow payments, you know, what the effect that they're having. And as Alex says, you know, if it's persistent, you know, raising that with a Small Business Commissioner, because, you know, that's what the department there is for, really. So.
And I think one thing I've picked up in this conversation, and thanks for this, we've covered quite a wide range of topics. I guess that's the nature of the National Enterprise Network, right? You do cover quite a broad range of topics, and the nature of that dialogue, that network, seems to be a really valuable thing for business owners and people to get involved with. So that's dialogue is the thing that's coming out and loud and strong as it relates to the National Enterprise Network. Is that a fair takeaway for me?
It's a completely fair takeaway, Terry. From our perspective, the majority of our members are not-for-profit organisations who are community embedded. And as we all know, the micro businesses are within our communities. So that's where we support them. So yes, that is a significant takeaway, Terry. We are there to have a dialogue in a non-biased environment and to support those businesses.
Good. Well, if you want to have that dialogue and you want to join the network, we're going to put the link down below for people to be able to go to the network and to join up if you want to. It seems very, very valuable. Carol and Alex, thank you for your time today. It's been a great pleasure.
Thank you.
A lot of ground. I look forward to continuing to work with you both. Thank you.
Thanks, Terry.
Thanks very much, Terry. Thank you.